RVFTA's Campground of the Week is sponsored by Jayco. To view their complete line of RVs, visit jayco.com.
America the Beautiful. There is adventure to be found around every corner.
And there is no better way to explore it than by staying at one of our country's 14,000 campgrounds.
Our team of correspondents will guide you to the best places to park your rig or pitch your tent.
On each week's episode, we'll give a complete review of one campground, location, activities, amenities, best sites, and tons of other insider intel.
Plus, we'll talk about regional highlights, food, culture, attractions, family fun, and all things great outdoors.
From the East Coast to the West Coast, and from the Great Lakes to the Mississippi Delta, it's time to hit the open road with RVFTA's Campground of the Week. Our Midwest correspondent is Carrie Cox of TravelsWithBirdie.com. Carrie is a librarian and a passionate reader, writer, and photographer who loves to travel in her Jayco travel trailer, aka Birdie. After only spending a few short weekends in Birdie, Carrie and her family decided to take an epic road trip from Missouri to Yosemite National Park. Her blog posts were nothing short of stunning.
Hi, Carrie. Welcome back to Campground of the Week.
Hi, Jeremy and Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
So good to talk to you again. Last time on episode number 17, you took us to Bennett Spring State Park in Missouri. Where are you taking us to this week?
We are driving you 15 miles south of that iconic Golden Gate Bridge to San Francisco RV Resort in Pacifica, California, which is located directly on the Pacific Ocean.
Okay, so what is the most important thing that people need to know about this campground right off the bat?
Well, it's kind of a parking lot, but the thing is, it's a parking lot overlooking the ocean. So that first day when we arrived, we pulled in, we hopped out, and we just ran to the edge of that parking lot and looked over at the Pacific Ocean. And it just gave me chills because we had driven from Missouri all the way to California, and here we were standing on the edge of the United States. So that was just kind of a really epic feeling to know we had made it there, and we were in this beautiful spot.
So a parking lot is not exactly what most people expect in a campground, but sometimes a parking lot can feel epic.
Yes.
Yes. Now, you have a great blog post about this campground, and we will definitely link to it in the show notes for this episode over at campgroundoftheweek.com. But tell our listeners a little bit about your decision making and any of your concerns you had leading up to booking this site.
It can be hard to find a good place to stay in San Francisco. I felt like I kind of had researched TripAdvisor, RV park reviews, Campendium. I had done a lot of research, and there's a KOA in Petaluma that had really great reviews, but it's an hour north of the city. And we had done a lot of driving already, driving in and out of Sequoia and in and out of Yosemite. And for San Francisco, we just wanted a convenient spot. We knew we weren't going to be in our travel trailer very much, and we just wanted a nice spot for exploring the city. So most of the campgrounds in San Francisco get pretty mixed reviews, and we just really didn't know which one to pick. We finally decided, hey, this one at least has this ocean view, so we'll go there. And we went in with kind of low expectations, honestly, not really expecting much, and we were just really pleasantly surprised. It was a perfect base camp for exploring the city.
So just how convenient is this base camp in terms of getting into San Francisco?
It's about 15 miles south of the city, so you just hop on the interstate and you're pretty much anywhere in 15 or 20 minutes. We found it really easy to get in and out of places, and the town that it's located in is called Pacifica, and it's a great little town with, you know, colorful bungalows overlooking the ocean, and it has restaurants and shops and grocery stores, so it's kind of a nice area in and of itself.
All right, so we're going to kind of think of this as an urban RV base camp instead of maybe what people think of when they think a traditional campground.
Exactly.
All right. So good. Going on from there, now that we have our expectations set up, right?
Yes.
What kind of campground is this? It's a resort RV park, so I'm assuming it's a private park. Any discounts?
Yes, they have a Good Sam discount, and they are part of the Thousand Trails system, which I'm not as familiar with being from Missouri. We don't have any Thousand Trails here, but on their website, it looks like it's part of that package that you can get.
Okay, so you can get a discount, I think, from the Encore system.
Yes.
And we'll put that in the show notes also.
So how big is the campground? About roughly how many sites? Is it a medium-sized campground, a small campground?
It's a large one. There's 150 sites.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was quite that large. Okay, excellent.
Now, you stayed there for a few days, and was it jam-packed the whole time? Do you need to book this far in advance, or is it one of those spots that you can sort of decide to show up and get a spot as you're traveling up the California coast?
Yeah, you definitely would want to book in advance. Part of the spots did seem to be with long-term, maybe kind of permanent people staying there. So if you're wanting to get a spot there, I would definitely book in advance.
About how many sites have that stunning ocean view? I mean, obviously all of the sites aren't right up there on the water, right?
Right. So here's the other kind of weird thing that's happening there. The ocean is on a cliff. I mean, they're on a cliff overlooking the ocean. Well, the cliff has been eroding. So they lost some of their overlook sites, but those are still available just with no hookups. As far as I could, when we were there, that was true. On the website, they don't have those listed anymore, so they might have changed. If you're really wanting to overlook the ocean and you're willing to do that without hookups, you might call and see if you can get into those spots that are on the end. But they do sell advertise some spots as their inland, like inland premium spots where you can get a glimpse of the ocean. So you're not quite directly on the edge overlooking it, but you would see it from your windows. You'd see it when you stepped out of your RV.
And where you were, was it a pretty easy walk up to that ocean view, or did you have to walk a ways?
No, it was very easy, just, you know, a few hundred yards.
Now, in your blog post, you mentioned that you had an end site. Did you plan for that, or did you just luck out?
We lucked out. I think one of the advantages of having a tiny travel trailer is that they can kind of stick you in these odd sites. And we've really lucked out at a lot of places in having an end site that's generally shorter than all of the other sites. And so ours actually had a little grassy area and a picnic table out where most of them did not have that. So if you have a small travel trailer, you might ask, I believe we were site number 157.
Okay. So how much does it cost to camp here at the San Francisco RV Resort?
This is definitely the most expensive place we've stayed. I think our site was a little discounted since it was shorter. And so we got a good deal because the website shows prices are now $70 to $91 a night plus 12% taxes and a $4 resort fee. So that can add up really quickly. But if you compare that to the cost of hotel rooms in San Francisco, it's still a substantial savings. I went ahead and double-checked that fact, fact-checked myself, and it looked like just, you know, your kind of basic hotels can be over $200 a night. So if you can get a $100 a night RV spot, that's still a good deal.
And those hotels you're talking about probably do not have stunning ocean views, I'm guessing.
Probably not.
sounds like a bargain to me, considering the proximity to San Francisco and considering that it's oceanfront.
That's right. And I think, you know, in San Francisco, the cost of living is so high and any property is worth so much that, you know, if they built houses there, I'm sure it would be worth a lot more money. So it's nice that this place even exists.
That's what we say about the Jersey Shore and campgrounds. That's why there's no campgrounds on the Jersey Shore. It doesn't pay. All right. Yeah. So you mentioned the sites that are right waterfront, and you mentioned your end site, and then many of them were just parking lot sites along the way. Is there any other kind of site that you need to tell us about, right? Ones that are closer to the road, further away? Are there any other details that might help us pick where we're going to stay when we visit this campground?
Yeah, I think most of them were pull-throughs, so if you have a big rig, you're going to fit fine. And even though the one side of the campground is along the road, we didn't really notice it being noisy or anything. It seemed like a quiet area.
So tell us about the amenities at the campground. What do they have in terms of pool, playground, game room, any of that stuff?
They have a pool. And we had spent some really hot days at Sequoia and Yosemite. And so my boys, when we got to San Francisco, this was the first place we had a pool at in quite a few days. And they were determined to hop in that pool, even though it was 55 degrees and drizzly and cloudy. They went and hopped in the pool. So they stayed in until they turned blue and got on out. But there is a small pool there. There's a hot tub and a swing set. And that's kind of it as far as resort, you know, amenities. And the bathhouse was very clean and had really large showers. So I appreciated that.
I love how Carrie always gives us a good bathroom review.
That's great.
Now, okay, Carrie, when did you visit and it was 55 degrees? Weren't you there in June?
This was. And so it was kind of a shock. Luckily, we had friends who lived in San Francisco who had warned us to take jackets. Otherwise, we probably might not have even really had anything like that. But luckily, we had jackets and hoodies and pants because we ended up needing them while we were there. The weather changes. You have days that are just beautiful and, you know, 60 to 70, but then it can just on a dime be 55 and drizzly and cloudy. So it was that would definitely be a tip, is to take your long sleeve clothes.
Carrie, I've always said the coldest winter I've ever spent was a summer in San Francisco.
Oh, that's your quote.
That was Mark Twain, right?
Oh, it was me, I thought.
Don't try to.
Did I get it right at least? I'm messing with the librarian here, which is like lesson one.
Don't like, mess with the librarian.
Don't plagiarize on air with a librarian who's getting her PhD.
I get bonus points for getting the reference, I think.
Yes, bonus points always for the librarian. Okay, I'm assuming we have no scheduled activities or things like that at this campground.
That's right. So there's no activities. The main thing that you can do here is along the cliff, they do have a little walkway. And so one woman said that one morning she was out and saw whales out in the ocean. And you cannot actually get down to the water from that anymore because of the erosion. They've closed that off. But the park is super convenient to other public beaches and access points. And so I think it was maybe 5 minutes away. We went to Sharp Park Beach. And so even though you don't have anything right in the resort, you're really convenient to other things.
Carrie, the takeaway I'm getting here is that the San Francisco RV Resort is not in San Francisco and it's not a resort, but it's still the best possible option for camping near San Francisco.
That's right. I mean, we really liked it here. I felt like it was a friendly place. It was convenient. The kids were happy because they had Wi-Fi finally. And we found it very accessible and comfortable. So a very great place to stay.
Now, you've given us a lot of insider details as it is, but is there anything else that you can recommend when people are thinking about planning a trip here?
You have to make sure that you go and watch a sunset. So one evening we made sure that our dinner was early enough so we could get back to the campground, and we walked to the edge of the parking lot, and there's a bench there where you can hang out on the rocks. But just watching that sun sink into the ocean and the sky change colors and the water change colors is really a magical, special event.
Yes, and you had some pictures of that too that we'll put up in the show notes and, of course, link to as well. But nobody's perfect, alas. So what is one recommendation that you could give to this campground, to the owners of this campground and the managers, just to make the experience that much better for the visitors?
I think, you know, they need to put in some trees and make some really nice big spots. And no, they do. It would be awesome if it had that ambiance of a lovely campground, like some of the ones we love so much. But other than that, I do hope that they work on the situation and maybe get it stabilized where, you know, you could get down to the water. That would be great. And or if they figure out how to get the hookups and stuff to those end sites. So I hope they're working on some of that. I think that's kind of a newer development in the last couple of years. So
yeah, that climate change there.
There's always an interesting tension, too, because when a place like this has such great location, I guess it might be hard to get the owners good and motivated to dump a lot of money into things like that, because people are going to come anyway because there's so little competition and it's so close to such a magnificent city.
Right. And like I said about Rancho Sedona and Sedona, again, even though it is kind of one of the only spots, they do really seem to take care of the park. We felt like it was really tidy. The people in the store were very friendly. And so, you know, even though it didn't have its own ambiance of a beautiful campground, it seemed like they had pride in the park and took care of it.
Yeah, it's possible to put in some trees. I know there's urban camping in New Orleans, in New York City, and they managed to put in a little slice of grass here or there, a bush or something. So it's possible. Thank you so much, Carrie, for that great review of the San Francisco RV Resort. And we are going to be back in a minute to talk about all the amazing activities and attractions that are in this area around San Francisco. So stay tuned.
Since 1968, Jayco, the world's largest privately owned RV manufacturer, has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories together.
Today, Jayco offers everything from camping trailers to gas Class A motorhomes, complete with more standard features and a longer, stronger 2-year warranty.
Jayco gives you the value you're looking for and the peace of mind you deserve. Lots of family fun is to be had around a campfire with a Jayco nearby.
For more information, visit your closest Jayco dealer or jayco.com. Jayco, generations of family fun.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're here with Carrie Cox from TravelsWithBirdie.com, and she just gave us a great review of the San Francisco RV Resort. Now she's going to tell us about all the great things there are to do in the area. So, Carrie, what should we do first?
You have to plan time to take a visit to Muir Woods National Monument. So, John Muir, you know, he's famous explorer of this area of California and has written, you know, lots of books about his travels. And one of the things he said was the clearest way into the universe is through a forest wilderness. And when we went to Muir Woods, I felt like that was that forest wilderness he was talking about, even though we were just minutes from San Francisco. It's just like you're in another world. So we had went to Sequoia National Park right before that. And even though those trees were big, I just didn't feel like I was transported out of that spot. But when we were at Muir Woods, it was kind of transcendental.
Awesome. About how far from the resort is that to drive to Muir Woods?
I bet it was about 30 minutes because I think we were, you know, 15, 20 minutes to San Francisco proper, and then it was another maybe 10 to 20 minutes north of there. But it was kind of cool because you do go across the Golden Gate Bridge and go up through some pretty areas on your way.
Now, did you do some hiking there?
We did. There's really just one trail through Muir Woods. It's about a 2-mile walk, and you can do a loop through the park. So it's a very simple trail. If you have young kids, it's nice because it is a very easy child-friendly trail. And one of my favorite parts of it was there's one part marked the Cathedral Grove where they say that you should not talk loudly, and it's, you know, meant to be kind of a quiet, reverent experience. And it really was. So I loved that they made that a place, you know, made a place for that in this park.
Okay, we'll avoid there. All right.
Great stuff.
We'll keep out.
I was in my head, I'm dreaming like, oh, what an amazing combination to be able to go to like downtown San Francisco and then to go to Muir Woods, not too far away, and then you crush my dreams.
Well, no. I mean, sometimes they can whisper. We could practice. On the long drive out there, we would practice whispering, okay?
We did hear some children. You wouldn't be the only ones.
But, yeah. Okay.
Well, those were probably our children, and we weren't even in California.
Yeah. It's a great, just a really beautiful spot. No. Oh, and I have to say, what are those things you can order? The Junior Ranger program, when you do it there, their Junior Ranger badge is made out of redwood, and it smells kind of like a campfire. It's a smoky wood smell. So my boys, they're a little older, and they weren't as into getting the Junior Ranger badges, but I made them like do this one. I guess we wanted that.
Tell us the truth, Carrie. Do you wear those Junior Ranger badges around the house?
I just like to sit around and smell it.
That sounds like a very relaxing Junior Ranger badge. Maybe we can figure out a way to put that in the infuser that I recommended on our gear guide and kind of infuse our campers with this redwood sort of smell to it. Now, I know that this was the highlight for you of your visit to San Francisco in a lot of ways, but you also enjoyed a lot of other activities too. So what else did you do?
Well, obviously, you can't go to San Francisco without seeing the Golden Gate Bridge. And this was one of those things that I hadn't really thought about before. Like, I knew we'd seen it, but when I knew we'd see it, but I didn't really expect it to emotionally affect me. But when we got there and there was the Golden Gate Bridge, you do kind of have this moment where it's just like, whoa, you know, that's the Golden Gate Bridge. I've seen that on TV. I've seen that in movies. It's really this icon. So it was pretty neat going across that. When you do go across that, one thing you should note is they'll send you a bill in the mail to charge you your fee for crossing the bridge. And if you don't pay that bill, they give you a $25 fine. And so I may or may not have been a little late getting back from our trip and paying that bill. So it cost us $32 to cross the Golden Gate Bridge, but it was worth every penny.
Okay, seems like a pretty inefficient system for collecting fees.
They had her picture up on post office walls all across California.
Oh, brother. Yeah. Let me buy a ticket there, right?
Yeah. That was just from driving. When you drive across, they take a picture of your license plate, and so you get the bill in the mail. We actually liked it better than in Oklahoma. We had not planned for all the toll roads, and we didn't have money on us, and we remembered back in Birdie, we had our stack of quarters for the laundry machines, so we had to hop out, get that, so we could throw them in all those change machines. So actually, we really did like the system on the Golden Gate Bridge. It was just our own error for not actually paying it efficiently when we got home.
All right. So
watch for the bill.
You've been fined. All right. Yeah. Now, and I really think it's important that people don't miss out on those iconic experiences, even if they seem a little touristy, because I felt that way about things like Niagara Falls and many of the other things that we do. And living right outside of New York City, like just going to the Empire State Building, like these things affect you in a way that you might never even realize until you're there.
That's right. And I think those are the kinds of things that your children will, you know, remember when they eventually see Golden Gate Bridge on TV, you know, they can say, hey, I've been there. I've seen that. So I do think that's the kind of thing that'll stick in my younger son, who doesn't really like the mountains and the waterfalls so much. I really think that is the kind of thing that he's like, okay, I did that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. All right, where to next?
Well, part of on the way to Muir Woods, you go by the Marin Headlands, and that's a great place to go. You kind of go up a hill, and you're overlooking the Golden Gate Bridge from high up. So that's a great picture point. There's also some trails there. We didn't get to do trails that day, but we did do a trail at the Land's End. Is it a national monument? I don't remember what it's technically called, but at Land's End, there's a trail there that goes to a labyrinth. Some artists had built this labyrinth, and unfortunately it got vandalized not too long ago, but then a whole community came out to help rebuild the labyrinth. And it was just kind of a really neat place to go and see that. And then you see the Golden Gate Bridge from another angle. And the day we went there, it was really foggy, so we saw the bridge in the fog. And it was just kind of neat through the whole trip to, you know, be on the bridge, to be above the bridge, to be on this side of the bridge. And you kind of get to see it from all kinds of different points.
Now, you also took a walk on the wild side, right?
Yeah. So we went to Haight-Ashbury. You can't go to San Francisco, I don't think, without going there. And my younger son, I don't know where he gets it. He's kind of the prude of the family. And he was not impressed with the counterculture, but we thought it was really fun. It was a vibrant area. Still definitely has the hippie essence, the beautiful painted lady Victorian buildings around there. So it was a fun area to see. Again, one of those places you hear about all your life, and it's neat to see.
Now, I was there when I was probably 8 years old, and it was gritty when I was there. Is it kitschy now, or is it still kind of a little bit on the gritty side? Is it really a walk on the wild side, or has it kind of become almost touristy?
Well, there's a Ben and Jerry's there, so I think that probably
answers. That says it all. Carrie, way to pinpoint it.
Yeah, my husband, he did find a sign on the ground that said, you know, $15 gets me out of your city. So he was, you know, found someone's sign that probably a straggler wandering the streets had held up maybe to get some money. And he held that up for a while, and we took his picture and then pretended not to know him.
And your kids were horrified, right?
Yeah, they were. They're used to that, though, with their dad. So it's a fun area. It really didn't seem very gritty. But again, we were there probably in the middle of the day on a weekday. So not the grittiest time of day.
Yeah, go back at night, right?
Yes. And I have to say, we really felt like in San Francisco that it was a really clean city. We went downtown. We went to City Lights Bookstore. My husband and I, being English majors, had read, you know, a lot of the beat literature and books. So we stopped into the bookstore that had been owned by Lawrence Ferlinghetti, one of the
still is, and I think he's still alive.
Yeah, that's right.
He's in his 90s now, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, they said he sometimes pops in there. And so it was fun to see the signs on the wall, you know, like read books, don't go to war, you know, things like that. And it still, again, had that essence. But when we were talking about going there and I saw, oh, it's, you know, right downtown. And I was kind of worried based on some other city experiences we had. But it just really felt like the whole city was very clean and nice.
This episode has gotten very literary, I have to say. There's a lot of quoting going on.
Hey, Coney Island of the Mind is what is probably my favorite American book of poetry.
I know, you gave it to me when we were dating. Here we go. A walk on the literary side. This is what happens when you interview a librarian. All right, Carrie, what about Fisherman's Wharf?
That was also a fun place. It, again, quintessential tourist spot, but we got there, there was a band playing, there were people dancing in the streets. We saw a skateboarding dog. I mean, where else can you see a skateboarding dog? So it was just fun and vibrant. And we went to the Musée Mécanique, which is, I hope I said that right, but has a collection of old penny arcade games that you can now play with quarters. And the boys had fun walking around there. And after you go outside there, you can walk along the bay and see Alcatraz. We did not get to go to Alcatraz because even though everybody had warned us about buying tickets in advance, at the end of the school year, my teacher brain was in teacher mode and forgot to do that. So if you do go to San Francisco and want to go to Alcatraz, you must get the tickets.
Get them online in advance, right?
That's right. So we did not get to do that. And we were kind of sorry, but we did get to see it from the shore. And then we also got to see the seals on Pier 39. So that's kind of a neat place to walk along and see the seals that come up to this. They return to this spot and kind of neat to see that.
Now, I know that you found a favorite place for chow near the campground, right? And we always love those kinds of recommendations. So what's the scoop on that?
All right. So right in Pacifica, just up from the campground, is a place called Camelot's Fish and Chips. And it is set up like an old English pub. They pretty much only serve fish and chips, maybe a couple other variations on that. And it was a kind of a fun place. You really did feel a little bit like you were in a different spot and had some good food. So we enjoyed that.
Price range, affordable, expensive?
Yeah. $10, I think, gets you your fish and chips.
You know, Carrie, as you've been telling us all about this RV resort and visiting San Francisco, it's really stood out to me that, you know, for RVing, a lot of people say, oh, you know, when you've got little kids, you can drag them all over the place and they don't know anything, right? And then when you're retired, you get to go wherever you want. But you're in that middle spot where you're, you know, you have preteens and you're traveling with kids who may not be totally enthusiastic about all of the same things that you are. And yet, you know, while you were reviewing San Francisco, it really stood out to me that it has a lot to offer that age group.
It does. And we're still learning to try to find that balance and to find those things that our 11 and 14-year-old sons will enjoy too. And San Francisco really did bring a smile to their faces. They both just enjoyed that. So it's a great place for everyone. There's so much that we didn't get to do. I think there's a children's museum, a science museum, just tons of stuff that we could have spent the whole 3 weeks there, but we just had 3 days. So we crammed in as much as we could.
Yeah. So for all of our listeners, you know, if they're trying to travel with teenagers, even those urban base camps might be a great thing to look for, to offer kids a bit more of a quirky vacation that they can engage in.
And there's more of those types of urban campgrounds than you might think. And like Carrie said at the beginning, you know, there was a KOA with great reviews an hour away that would have had pools and bounce pillows and all that stuff, but you made the choice to be closer to the city, and it sounds like that paid off.
It did. We really got to pack a lot of time in the city. And if we were driving, we wouldn't have gotten to do that. So we were really, really happy with our choice.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much for reviewing the San Francisco RV Resort. And thank you also to Jayco for sponsoring Campground of the Week. To see their full line of RVs, visit jayco.com. Now, Carrie, tell our listeners where they can find you and all of your wonderful blog posts about RVing with your kids.
Thanks. I am Travels with Birdie pretty much everywhere. Travelswithbirdie.com, and then a Facebook page, a Pinterest page, and Instagram is my favorite. So find me there.
All right. Thank you so much, Carrie. That was really a terrific review of the campground and of the San Francisco area. Can't wait to get back there ourselves.
Right. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in to RVFTA's Campground of the Week.
Links to the campground and regional attractions can be found in the show notes at campgroundoftheweek.com.
And don't forget to check out the other podcasts in our network.
RV Family Travel Atlas is hosted by yours truly, Jeremy and Stephanie Puglisi, and available every Friday morning.
And Girl Camper, Going Places, Doing Things, is hosted by Janine Pettit and released every Tuesday morning.
Join us next Thursday for another great review from our team of campground correspondents who will inspire you to hit the open road and explore America the Beautiful.